Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And Ian is presented to you by Progressive Insurance. You can find him at Ian Fitz ESPN. You can find me as well at Amber W Sports. So the NFL draft may be over, but NFL is just getting started. Tom Telesco, Las Vegas Raiders general manager, kind enough to join us here.
And Tommy, thanks for your time as always, man. The NFL calendar, it never goes away. First question, it's a hard-hitting one for my Amber and I. Where's the surfboard?
Oh, well, I don't even know if your audience knows what the surfboard is, do they?
COVID draft, 2020.
Yeah, you know, way back in San Diego, a surfboard company gifted me a surfboard with a big lightning bolt on it, and it's a really beautiful surfboard, and I don't surf, which made it even more interesting. So it was really just a piece of art in our house, and then during the COVID draft, we just, for some background, during the draft, just put it behind the table during the draft. And so then it was really in every draft room after that as like a good luck symbol, maybe. But I did not bring that with me to the Raiders. We don't need that. That surfboard is back in Orange County somewhere. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. It's such a nice, piece of art. But and since I don't surf, it's not going to go in the water. But no, I need to get something different here for the Raiders. I'm not sure what it's going to be yet.
Well, that goes.
You don't have a Vegas hotel with a whirlpool yet, like a surf. You know, whatever those things are they have on cruise ships where you can surf on them. I feel like that's ripe for Vegas.
The wave
actually.
Pool.
The thing where you can
a roulette table.
Surfing,
I don't think the league would like a roulette table in the draft room, probably.
Tom Telesco, Las Vegas Raiders general manager, joining us here on Amber and Ian. All right, so let's talk about this draft. Now, I'm not sure a draft ever goes as expected. Certainly, this one caught some people by surprise. What is a story from this year's draft that we might not know of? Something that happened behind the scenes, maybe somebody that you were high on that didn't end up in the position or vice versa, somebody who fell to you that you never thought you were going to have a chance at. What's your number one story from this draft?
And I was talking about this earlier with somebody else. I mean, as we went through our first round draft scenarios, and we're picking 13, so there's not that many you have to go through if you're picking, obviously, in the late 20s and early 30s. You can't even hit all the scenarios. But as we kind of worked through, this is probably 2 weeks before the draft, we kind of worked through a scenario of if certain players were gone and Brock Bowers was available, what would we do? And it was a pretty in-depth discussion amongst our small group because, obviously, we had drafted Michael Mayer here last year. Michael Mayer is an excellent tight end with an arrow up and really getting into his NFL career to be a really good tight end in this league. And as a group, we were talking about it, and we kind of came back to, look, if he's there, if a couple things happen and he's there, we'll take him. You know, on offense, we're looking to score more points. We didn't score enough points last year, and we felt like he's a player that, as a skill position player, can really help us in that regard. And fully knowing that, we did take a tight end 2 years before, and, the value of tight ends may not be the same as it had been the last couple of years, but we just felt the type of player that he was and where you can use him on the football field as a tight end, in the slot, as a receiver, maybe on the wing, that he can do a lot of different things for us and work the middle of the field, which is really important, especially having at least one younger quarterback with Aiden O'Connell, and then Gardner Minshew is, still has a lot of good football in front of him. So we went through that process, and then lo and behold, on draft day, that's kind of how it played out. The quarterbacks went really early, a couple other players went early, and we're sitting there with Brock Bowers, so we're excited to take him there.
All right, so when you saw Terrion Arnold say it came down to a coin flip that he was told, your reaction was?
That I typically use a magic eight ball in that situation rather than a coin is my first thought. But, yeah, that was pretty interesting. Considering I just told you the story that we had gone through that scenario 2 weeks before. So I don't know where that came from.
It sounds like tongue-in-cheek, right? Where maybe, Antonio Pierce calls him and says, hey, man, it came down to a coin flip. Not being literal, but he took it literally. I mean, that's the way I took it.
I'll tell you what, that would be great draft day TV from one of the NFL Network cameras or ESPN cameras if you saw me in the draft room flipping a coin in the air to pick a player. Holy cow.
That would be great. I wonder what the hit rate on that would be. If you just flipped coins every time instead.
You ask a lot of people, they're going to say that coin's smarter than I am anyway. So, but look, if you look at it, the hit rate in the first round's like, 48 to 50%. So maybe the coin is smarter than we are.
You kill us. I mean, you absolutely kill us. He's one of the best talent evaluators. He's being self-deprecating right now. And that is Tom Telesco, GM of the Raiders, joining us here on ESPN Radio with Amber Wilson. I'm Ian Fitzsimmons. How much, especially when you're in a division, again, with the Kansas City Chiefs, how much do you go highest-rated player versus need?
You know, it's something you do have to weigh, but we have to remind ourselves here that, you know, a need we may have today, it may not be a need in August, it may not be a need in November, or there may be a position on the football team we don't feel is a need right now, and all of a sudden by September it's a need. And the example I've used is my first draft with the Chargers, the San Diego Chargers. That team, we felt like, of all the positions, we felt like our strongest position group was wide receiver. And we're in the third round of the draft, and Keenan Allen's card is up on the board just staring at us, and we didn't really have a need there. We're like, look, you know, he's too good to pass. Like, we just need to take him, even though he may have to redshirt it this year. He may not even dress this year, his first year. And then, you know, we get to OTAs, and one of our veteran receivers gets hurt for the season. The season starts, and one other receiver didn't perform the way we thought he'd perform, and then another receiver got hurt, and Keenan jumps in there, and I don't know, week two or three or four, and ends up being rookie of the year. So, you know, when we're drafting these players, we're really drafting for the next 4 or 5 years down the road, not necessarily to fill a need by Labor Day of this year. So that's what you have to kind of keep in the back of your mind. Now, if there's an immediate need that you have, and there's a really talented player that kind of, and those kind of cross, and that's perfect, then we'll take that player. But, you know, we try and get the best player we can in each round, you know, without trying to hit the specific need, because like I said, needs just change so often in this league, it's unpredictable. So that's been the philosophy.
Tom Telesco joining us. Now, let's talk about how you make those decisions. And I know you guys are supposed to act like everyone's on the same page and everything's kumbaya within these organizations. But realistically, Tom, let me in a little bit behind the curtain here. How much disagreement, we can call it friendly disagreement, but how much disagreement is there with the different voices in the draft room?
There definitely is. Now, not necessarily on draft day, but in the process leading up to it, in the meetings that we have, there definitely is. And it actually would be kind of odd if there wasn't, because we're evaluating players, and in the end, they're just all opinions and very subjective when we talk about the players and what they can do for our football team. So you put enough football people in a room, you're going to have some people with different opinions and different thoughts, and that's why we have meetings and we discuss things. And then fully knowing at the end, you know, even every player we draft, there may not be every single person that's 100% on that, but we do know that when we leave the draft room, like, hey, like, once they're ours, and we're all in on that decision. But you do need some, you know, if you want to call it disagreements, but you need some disagreements, some different perspectives to make these decisions. We'll kind of weigh in the objective data on that too, and that's always part of the process. But that's natural when you're making decisions on probably hiring people in all sorts of businesses, but certainly in football and in sports. And it's my job to kind of take all that information in and then try and make a good educated decision on what player do we think has the best odds of being successful for us. And that's kind of how it goes.
You've been in this business a long time. How often do you hear about it later? Like from the scout that you had the argument with, and then you take the guy and the scout ends up being right. The guy is a big hit. Like, who does that scout come back? Like, I told you so. I told you so.
All the time. Yep. Oh yeah. That's a big part of scouting right there. And even say maybe a player that, hey, we didn't see as well, and he goes somewhere else and plays really well. And it's all part of it. You know, there's just no way you're going to be right all the time on every player. It's impossible.
All right, give us – you used to be a scout for the Hall of Famer Bill Polian and then his top assistant. So was there – give me your one guy that our great friend and Hall of Famer Bill Polian said no to you on, and you end up being right.
Oh, boy.
You know you got one in your hip pocket. You're just not going to say it because it's Bill. I know it.
I got one, but he didn't say no to it. I kind of messed up the process because I wanted to draft Julian Edelman and – I didn't present it the right way, so that was on me.
Peyton Manning's online too, by the way. We're going to bring that.
Yeah, that one, I've never forgotten that one. I just didn't present it the correct way. But I really can't think of too many. I'm sure there probably was, but I can't really think of any right now.
How did you not present it the right way? Because I know it's in the back of your mind, right? Not even the back. Now you remember exactly how you presented it. Go ahead.
Well, now that you bring it up, so, I mean, he was a quarterback in college, and we were projecting him to wide receiver, and I'd seen him play live in one of those Tuesday night MAC games, I think it was at the University of Buffalo, and he was covering punts and doing everything, and, you know, just a really highly instinctive, tough football player, and then he ran pretty fast. He ran at his pro day, I think, in the high four fours maybe, and I just felt like that, you know, we could probably draft him really later to sign him after the draft because of the position change, and, you know, we can probably draft somebody else first, which I think we have drafted Pat McAfee, so that worked out pretty well, actually.
Yeah.
But then when New England drafted him, that was tough because obviously they were our huge rival at that point with the Colts, and then he went on to have an incredible career. So at least we hit on the player with Pat, but I was just, you know, he was just, Julian Ellen was just one of those players, like, you just want on your football team. And, hey, look, we'll figure out the projection later. Let's just give him a shot. And I probably wasn't strong enough about it, but, hey, look, we got Pat McAfee, who I was, you know, I really liked him as well, so that kind of worked out.
Okay, since you bring up Edelman, he was at the Tom Brady roast, and I don't know if you've watched it. It's 3 hours long. It's hilarious. There are awkward moments. There's hilarious moments. I mean, it tugs on every heartstring. If one of your former players is getting roasted, one, would you go? Two, would you fire both barrels if you did?
Whew. That's hard. I mean, with these guys, I mean, they're putting their blood, sweat, and tears on the field for you. So I'd have a hard time going to a roast and just opening up on a player. There's just no way I could do that. Because don't forget, you know, when we, especially the guys you've been with a long time, like say you draft a player here and he comes in at 21 years old and you kind of see them grow up in front of your eyes and you end up treating them like your own kids at certain points. So I'd have a hard time roasting my kids. Well, I don't know about that. Maybe I could roast my own kids. But a former player, I'd have a hard time with that.
Tommy T, we know you're short on time, man. We greatly appreciate it. Oh, and by the way, our producers are in our ears. How close were you to trying to move up to get a quarterback? Well, I know that one. Go ahead. How close was it? I know you've been asked a million times.
We had talked about it. We had some interest at a certain point, but I could tell probably all the way back to January, those three teams at the top, those guys weren't going to move. And if I were them, I probably wouldn't have moved either. So we looked into and had some interest, but, you know, just nothing went.
I have two UFL games this weekend. I will be looking for what for you?
Usually returners is what you look for me, and then always offensive linemen. Those guys are a hot commodity, certainly after we go to training camp. So, yeah, give me your list when you're done.
The O-line, I got nothing on that. I'll leave that to Cole Kublik and Eric McClain. The returners, I'll do my best to help, to do whatever I can to help the Raiders. Tommy T, you're the best, man.
Tom Telesco, Las Vegas Raiders general manager. Thanks, Tom. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys. Thank you.
You're the best, man. The best line he had, I'm still trying to recover from it, Amber. I use a magic 8-ball, not a coin, when it comes to the Terry and Arnold story, if you're just tuning in. Mm-hmm. So good. So good.
Do you ever play with a magic 8-ball?
Yeah, growing up,
probably
absolutely.
Not. Really? So that was a boy thing,
one.
Too? Because I was thinking girls did it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, we'd sit around with, like, our friends and ask the magic 8-ball, you know,
when
does he
brought
like
it back
me?
In
or,
Goodwill,
like, will I, whatever.
When they brought it back in Goodwill Hunting, yes. I was like, oh, my gosh, yes. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to actually play with that thing all the time. When I was a kid, shake it up. It would tell me the answers. Not sure any of it actually came through. I don't think Magic 8-Ball was legit. James.
Magic 8-Ball and the paper puzzle thing. What were those?
Oh, yeah.
What was that called?
Yeah,
I don't remember that one.
I don't know. I feel like we used to put numbers in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, numbers
right?
And then colors and then, yeah.
Yeah.
And you have to spell it out.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Wow.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. My girls have been doing those things, like,
Those things are still around.
The babysitter taught them how to do it, so they love them, and then they'll just put things in there.
Oh, she was probably from the 90s, too. So
no, she's
grew
very,
up in the 90s.
Yeah.
I feel like those are like a 90s thing.
Yeah. Born in the 90s. I'm old. That's a whole other thing.
Wise.
You and I together there, kid. Coming up next here on Amber and Ian, was it the right move for the Phoenix Suns to fire Frank Vogel? We'll get back into that here on ESPN Radio.
Feeling like you need a marketing degree and an extra day in your week to successfully market your small business? Let Constant Contact do the heavy lifting for you. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has powerful tools that make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more to boost your business. Now, in just a few clicks, you can launch a marketing campaign that's tailored to your business and goals. That includes email, social, SMS, and more. So you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track your business growth. Plus, you can always count on Constant Contact's award-winning customer support for guidance along the way. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The Phoenix Suns have parted ways with their head coach, Frank Vogel. I'm not sure it's a surprising move, but also a move that's drawn a lot of criticism because a lot of people thinking Frank Vogel isn't actually the problem here. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance. At Ian Fitz, ESPN is how you find him. At Amber W Sports is how you find me. Quickly here, can we do an NBA update? Can I throw it? Can
Come
I,
on,
can I
hell yeah.
throw you into
Let's
the
go.
Fire, Josiah? Let's go. NBA
Amber and Ian.
Another long three and another bank, putting on a show.
NBA playoff update.
All right, appreciate you for having that ready to go. The Cleveland Cavaliers up on the Celtics, 111-87, under 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Now it feels a little bit like the C's have kind of given up a little bit, Ian. I mean, I don't want to reverse jinx from earlier, and then the Celtics come storming back. That would be terrible.
It ain't going to happen. I mean, again, they're down by a million. And on the opening tip of this game, they looked lethargic. So, hey, give Cavs full credit. You got one in Boston. But get ready because Boston's coming to Cleveland hell-bent. They just kind of rolled the jersey out. The only good thing for Boston tonight was Kristaps Porzingis' classic vintage Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, old school Celtics jacket. That was it. That was the only good thing for Boston tonight on the hardwood.
Yeah, there wasn't much else that was good Boston. I mean, Jason Tatum has put up 25 points in this game. But Donovan Mitchell has been a standout, of course, for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's looked phenomenal. He's looked even better than the box score suggests. 29 points for him, 7 rebounds, 7 assists so far. He's been out there for 38 minutes. We'll continue to keep you updated on this thing. But right now, Cleveland up 112 now to 87, squarely in control of this game as they head down the stretch. Frank Vogel is no longer in control of the Phoenix Suns. He was relieved of his duties after the Minnesota Timberwolves swept this team 11 days ago, and it looks like it will be Mike Budenholzer, the former Milwaukee Bucks head coach, who's going to end up being the head coach, according to Woj, is what it's looking like, that he will end up being the head coach there of the Phoenix Suns. We had on Alan Hahn earlier. If you missed anything here on Amber and Ian, check out the podcast on the ESPN app. And the host of Barton Hahn on ESPN New York 98.7 said that none of this should have been on Frank Vogel.
I don't know if it's the right decision, but I'm not surprised because the coach is the first one to get blamed when stars can't figure out how to play together. So that's the first place you go. Might have been a bit of an awkward fit. I know he had the success with the Lakers and they had stars there. Budenholzer, though, is not an easy guy to play for. He will get them organized, but I don't know how different it is from a guy like Vogel. Budenholzer was under a lot of scrutiny before he won that championship with the Bucks. So that's something to see, but I think they have more decisions to make in Phoenix than just simply a coaching change. It depends on if the cooler heads will prevail and they'll realize that those three guys and nothing else doesn't make sense. In today's NBA, where you're seeing now all around the league, not only is our team's younger, but they are built more with a star or two and then incredible supporting cast and depth.
Vogel went 49-33 in Phoenix. He, of course, succeeded Monty Williams, who was fired after the team's Western Conference semifinals loss to the Denver Nuggets. And here we are with the Phoenix Suns once again in the market for a new head coach, Ian.
And they shouldn't have been in the market for a new head coach going back to last season, Amber. In my opinion, Monty Williams was the NBA Coach of the Year just a couple of years removed. NBA Finals. You get bounced last year in the second round by the eventual champs in the Denver Nuggets in what? I think 6 games. And you fire them? Okay. Well, you know what? Patience, as John Wooden once said, as a legendary head coach at UCLA, is the ultimate virtue. And in this day and age, when you try and put, you know, two or three megastars together, it doesn't always work. And who are you going to blame? You blame Kevin Durant? Bradley Beal? Devin Booker? Who, by the way, all those three guys didn't exactly play a ton together this year. It wasn't exactly like they were on the court for 60 games together. So,
no, I mean, I don't have it in front of me. Do you know how many games we got out of them together?
I don't. I want to say it was maybe in the 20s, but I don't know. No. That's an ESPN Stats and Info, and I see James, our James Steele, producer, right now, kind of going and Googling and or just firing off an email to ESPN Stats and Info. But it wasn't a ton, I mean, at all. So, look, what do? You can't fire all three of those guys. So, instead of trying to figure it out like they should have with Monty Williams, you know what they did? Fired Monty, and now you're firing Frank Vogel after 1 year. Like Darvin Ham, 1 year removed from the Western Conference Finals, when we all said they overachieved with the Lakers 1 year ago, right? Well, you push the Nuggets. You have a double-digit lead in every game in a five-game series. You end up losing. What do? Well, you're not going to get rid of LeBron or AD. So what do? You fire the head coach. But it's not like there was a lot of depth and cohesiveness with either one of these organizations. So it drives me nuts when the easy, lazy way to go is just to fire the head coach, especially after 1 or 2 years.
But what else do you do? I mean, with the
Phoenix
Suns,
Monty Williams,
they're completely hamstrung in their situation. Well, obviously, they already messed up and didn't do that. But, I mean, in Phoenix's situation, your payroll's the highest in the NBA. You're a second apron team. It's going to be completely punitive for years in terms of what you're able to even do with this roster. There's not moves you can make. Right, you've got one superstar there with a no trade clause in his contract. Kevin Durant played well in the postseason. It's not like Kevin Durant's the problem. These guys individually, frankly, aren't the problem. And so, who do you blame for Phoenix getting bounced and getting swept?
You blame a GM for not having
the
depth.
Coach ends up. Well, but at the same time, it's the same GM that landed you three superstars. So that, you know, herein lies the complicating factor. Coming up next here on Amber and Ian, we will find out what is a big deal and what is not a big deal on ESPN Radio.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
I don't think the Boston Celtics are moving their feet or feeling much of anything right now. They are down now. A game here at home in Boston. So the series overall is even because they took game one, of course, against the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Boston Celtics have fallen here in game two, 118-94, as Cleveland was able to even this thing up. And you guys won't believe this. I mean, this is huge breaking news, James Steele, but the Boston Celtics fans started leaving the arena a few minutes before the game ended. Isn't that insane?
Just like
Heat fans. I thought that only happened in Miami.
Got it from them.
Well, Josiah, I mean, to your point, everyone at ESPN has told me that only happens in Miami.
They just played Miami. They must have caught it down there in Miami.
It's the most ridiculous thing.
Talk about missing that Ray Allen shot, huh?
Now we're going all the way back there. It's the most ridiculous commentary. Everybody leaves the arena when your team is losing. Everyone.
To be fair, that's why they bring it up.
The Ray Allen shot is hard to defend because that game was so close. Although living in Miami, I still understand it. That one was fine. That's like the one thing you can say. Because people were out. Well, if you were hitting the club, there's a club inside the arena, so you wouldn't have actually been locked out of the building. It's the people that were locked out of the arena trying to get back in, beating on the doors of the arena, like could not get back in after Ray Allen hit that shot. Anyways, that was like over a decade ago, so let's go ahead and move on from that. Let's find out what's a big deal and not a big deal.
It's making headlines.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
But is it a big deal or not a big deal with Amber and Ian.
And our producer, James Steele. I noticed Ian was very quiet during that whole back and forth. He did not want to get involved.
It was not a big deal to get into that, but go ahead.
It's a big deal that Amber's so petty right now.
That is a
James
big deal.
James gives me bleep about that constantly.
You notice, as you pointed out, I laid out because that is a decade ago.
All right. Yes. So we talked about him a little bit earlier, but exactly 2 weeks after the Commanders selected him with the number 2 overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, quarterback Jaden Daniels made his jersey number official on Thursday. The reigning Heisman Trophy winner will wear number 5 with the Commanders, the same jersey number he donned for 3 seasons in Arizona State and 2 years at LSU. The number 5 in Washington has been occupied by punter Tress Way for the last 10 seasons, dating back to when he was claimed off waivers in 2014. The Commanders posted a video on Twitter today saying who's cutting onions with the trade happening. Ian, big deal, not a big deal. Jaden Daniels, number 5.
Not a big deal because guess what? Tress Way got paid to give up that number. There you go.
Yeah, I was going to say, what happened to Tress Way? So he did get paid. It does seem like Jaden Daniels had to pay him for this and compensate him for this, right? So yes, now it's not a big deal because I feel like this worked out okay. And overall, who cares about jersey numbers? I'm not one of these people that gets
on.
Now it's a big
athletes,
deal.
Now you made it a big deal. Now we're going the other way because athletes are very, very superstitious when it comes to that particular thing. So if they've had immense success at the collegiate level or the minor league or whatever it may be, man, if they want that same comfort. So, yeah, now that part is a big deal. Tress Way getting paid is not a big deal.
That's fine if you want. From the athlete's perspective, who's actually wearing the jersey, what I don't understand is why fans care what numbers these guys are wearing.
I don't think fans only care when the jersey comes available. So, I mean, that's all they care about.
Yeah, I mean,
either way, you're buying it.
He said, like, go get that number 5 to the fans on Twitter. Yeah. So, I can't believe you don't think jersey numbers are a big deal.
To players? Absolutely.
Man. I still have 56 in my Twitter handle because I wore 56 in high school. I'm not even an athlete anymore.
Wow. Okay.
I never was.
But I can't tell. And by the way, I cannot tell you how many dudes I know that their social media involves the number that they wore in college or in high school. I cannot. That is every dude I know.
My daughters.
By the way. Yeah. Go ahead.
My daughters. My oldest is 22 and my youngest is 23. They get huffy pup in club soccer. My oldest daughter Rowan was always number 22. High school soccer, you could not wear that number. So in practice, she would wear it, and she would wear a T-shirt underneath her game uni that had 0, a goalkeeper's number. She would wear a number 22 underneath because it was mentally her number. So there you go.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, I know my husband's number when he, from D1 soccer. I didn't know my husband in college. did not know him, but I know what number he wore.
That is a big deal. That is a big deal.
It's all a big deal.
All right, if you guys say so.
It is. Numbers are a big deal. So apparently, Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft had a tense meeting before the roast of Tom Brady. They were front and center Sunday in what appeared to be a happy reunion. But according to 2 former players who attended the roast, the former Patriot coach and longtime owner also shared some pretty awkward moments off stage. Julian Edelman and Drew Bledsoe discussed the 3-hour roast during the latest episode of Edelman's Games with Names podcast and described the scene in the green room before the event. Pre-show in the green room. Remember that? Were you in there? Edelman asked Bledsoe. Bill's opening up, having fun. He's talking war stories, talking rookie skits, talking fun stuff, not stuff, doing stuff, not stuff. We know that Bill's all about, but it was like amplified because he was excited to see you guys because he doesn't have a job anymore. Then Kraft walks in. Belichick's kind of holding court. As he's in the middle of the story, Kraft walks in, and so you guys all walked over to say hi to Kraft. Quote, the tension in that room, though, could cut glass, Edelman said. Amber, big deal, not a big deal. Some tension between, or a lot of tension between Belichick and Kraft.
This is not a big deal because I would expect there to be tension from the guy who fired you.
Right.
Who fired you after you won six Super Bowls there and had the tenureship that you had there. Yeah, like I would kind of expect Bill Belichick to be peeved at Robert Kraft and there to be some tensions between those two. I'm sure that they acted in a somewhat professional and cordial manner, but I would expect deep down there to be quite a few tensions amongst them. And then, of course, you have the stories, Ian, about Robert Kraft maybe having cost Bill Belichick the Falcons job. There's a lot of reasons there for there to be tension between those two.
I'm going to go not a big deal because we saw the tension on stage. If you actually went and watched the entire roast when Kevin Hart tried to get Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick to do a shot together, it was like pulling teeth from, you haven't seen the whole roast yet, have you?
I still haven't seen the roast yet, no.
It's a three-hour roast. Break it into hour increments or however you need to go through
it. That's why I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. I mean, I've seen obviously clips what I've done. When do I have 3 hours?
Well, I haven't watched it in the entirety. What I did was I watched till I couldn't anymore, stopped, went and did whatever I had to do, watched, came back whenever it was, right, that I had 30 uh-huh. minutes. Trust me, it's worth it to finally get through the entire 3 hours. But – when Kevin Hart brings Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick together, Kraft did it immediately. Belichick begrudgingly finally shows up, but he had to take like a shot from somebody else's glass. I think it was Gronk's, which that's sketchy to begin with. But anyway, it was. Yeah. You could tell the tension there when they were both together. I mean, and Kraft tried to smooth it over, but yeah, it's not a big deal because we all saw it. If you watched the roast, you could tell these. Bill Belichick did not want to be anywhere near Robert Kraft.
The Toronto Maple Leafs relieved Sheldon Keefe of head coaching duties on Thursday. According to a statement from the club, a search for Keefe's replacement will begin immediately. That's probably obvious. Quote, today's decision was difficult. Leafs general manager Brad Trembling said, Sheldon is an excellent coach and a great man. However, we determined a new voice is needed to help the team push through to reach our ultimate goal. Ian, big deal, not a big deal. The Leafs looking for a new coach.
Always a big deal when a head coach gets fired. I don't care what it is, whether it's a manager in baseball, you know, or a coach in football, basketball, hockey. Bigger deal for Ryan Matlack, you know, our resident Canadian and producer, because he's a diehard Maple Leafs fan. But, yeah, it's a big deal. And their ultimate goal right now is not even getting to a Stanley Cup. Right now it's just getting past the damn first round of the playoffs. That's the bigger deal mm-hmm. for the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, just having some semblance of success here in the postseason. Just once in their past 14 postseason games have the Maple Leafs scored more than two goals in a single game. They were 1-for-21 on the power play and in that series against the Bruins after they went 7th in the regular season. I mean, this is a team that's obviously struggles to have any success in the postseason, and so it's another head coach that's going to end up not having a job because of it. It's obviously a big deal.
All right, one more, and hang with me on this one.
Come on,
Is it more hockey?
This isn't.
You sound terrified.
This isn't.
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, I kind of tapped out there on my hockey analysis.
Well, we've been doing a lot of hockey lately.
Girl out.
Hockey, big deal.
Rangers are up 2-1 right now. 4.5 to go in the third.
That's gross. Okay, so
that's gross.
Josiah off the top rope.
A brand. It's called Spilt Milk. All caps, SPYLT milk.
I'm out.
Is attempting to change the game by introducing a new beverage category, quote, functional dairy. With the help of YouTubers, content creators, and athletes, Spilt, all caps, SPYLT, was born. It has 20 grams of protein plus between 60 and 140 milligrams of caffeine. Caffeinated milk. Amber, big deal, not a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I'm here for it. Between 60 and 100 milligrams of caffeine.
60 and 140 milligrams of caffeine.
140.
That sounds like a lot, but
I think the average cup of coffee, I don't have it in front of me, I think the average cup of coffee has about 80 milligrams of caffeine
Trust me,
in
I know.
it. So this thing's going to be stronger than a cup of coffee. I like the protein content. It basically sounds like a caffeinated protein, whey protein drink is basically what it sounds like to me. I drink protein every single day of my life anyways. Like normally I drink protein shakes multiple times a day because I'm a little bit of a meathead like that. So throw some caffeine in one. I ain't opposed to it. I got to be honest. This is probably up my alley. Ian?
Not a big deal. Give me a damn triple shot of espresso and I'm good.
Yeah, but what if you had that coffee, the espresso, and then you put the spilt milk in it, and then you just
I mean, I'm about this life. 20 grams of protein, 0 grams of sugar, 90 calories.
Give me a piece of chicken and an espresso.
But also, what happens if you have a kid who drinks milk and you accidentally give them the spilt milk?
That cannot be done. Can you imagine Cullen on caffeine? Amber's 4-year-old. Come on with it. Here we go.
Heck no, that would not be good.
I
think there might be drawbacks.
He does like protein shakes. I have had to slow him down on trying to steal my protein shakes in the past, but the caffeine, zero chance I need that anywhere near.
All I know is this. Give me Ocean's 11 to break into Amber's house to give Cullen that spilt milk protein caffeinated thingamajigger and add video cameras. Available to video the next 6 hours. And that, my friends, is a hit on Netflix.
No, this is why they made home protection devices. Tune in for baseball action. Saturday is the Orioles host the Diamondbacks, presented by Progressive Insurance. Coverage begins at 3:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. Coming up
road
next
trip,
year, Amber
road
and Ian.
Trip. Let's go. Cullen on caffeine. Road trip.
Do you utilize the turndown service at a fancy hotel? We'll get into that next year on ESPN Radio.
With caffeine.
Rolling along here on Amber and Ian. Amber and Ian presented by Progressive Insurance. You can find him at Ian Fitz ESPN. You can find me at Amber W Sports. We have to get into a conversation we were having earlier about turndown service in hotels. But first, let's get you a hockey update.
Amber and Ian. Stanley Cup playoff update.
James Steele, that's your cue.
Yeah, we have a tie game in Carolina. The Hurricanes pulled their goalie and scored with a little over a minute left to tie the game at 2. We're at the end of regulation. It was Andre Svechnikov scoring for the Hurricanes. And, we're going to overtime here in Raleigh.
If you had the under, you're a winner.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. You're also a winner if you thought that the Cleveland Cavaliers were going to beat the Celtics tonight. Donovan Mitchell's 29 points, 8 assists, and 7 rebounds was the impressive performance of the night. 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help at Robert Half. They know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today. The Cavs beat the Celtics 118-94 to even up that series at 1 game apiece. Taken one there in Boston. But let's get you an update on live NBA action.
Amber and Ian.
Another long three and another bank, putting on a show.
NBA playoff update.
Dallas trying to even things up in Oklahoma City. It is early, but Dallas has come to play. The Mavs up on the Thunder 16-6 right now. 8 minutes left, roughly, in the first quarter. So early, but Ian, they're not looking flat.
Yeah.
Luka's not out there looking flat right now.
I did not play this game. If you are just tuning in, I sent a text message to Tim McMahon, ESPN NBA insider. How bad is Luka's knee? Said it doesn't need surgery by any stretch, but it's not exactly good. Well, to his point, I mean, Luka on the defense, Luka's been playing great D, right? And especially in the second half of the season. So far, even against the Clippers, I mean, the effort is there, but he ain't moving the same. And then in game one of this series, oh, my gosh. I mean, he looked like a shell of himself. So far, early in this game, to your point, Amber, looks a heck of a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. So we'll continue to keep you updated on all the live action here. And when game night comes up after us, they will keep you updated on the live action in the NBA as well. But let's get into this conversation. Oh, go ahead.
I see a guy in an orange shirt at OKC. And that's amazing because they will humiliate you if you don't put on, if it's a blue out or a white out, or they're going the, you know, the candy cane stripes with blue and white, they will put the Jumbotron on you and the rest of the arena will chant, put it on. I just saw a guy wearing an orange shirt. I'm shocked.
Yeah, I see it too. That guy's just being a bleep hole, right? Right. Like, that guy, like, I'm being serious. Like, that dude is just trying to stick out. Oh, there's a couple. There's another one. Like, and they're both wearing orange. That dude's just trying to stick out on TV. Like, that's all it is. It's like, I texted my friends, and I said, look for me on TV.
I ain't doing it.
And so I'm going to wear the bright orange shirt in the sea of everybody else wearing the same shirts, which, of course, looks cool from a television. That's a look at me guy. That's look at me Louie is what that guy is. Both of those guys, because I see two of them right now in the crowd.
There you go.
It's a jerk move. That's what that is. All right. I hope you're proud of yourself. So your friends can be like, oh my God, I see where you're sitting. I see you. Okay, great. I hope that changed your life. Anyways. All right. So let's talk about hotel turndown service. Cause somehow you brought this up before show.
It's my last road trip. I got two UFL games this weekend and one is home here in Arlington with the Renegades. And then I'm on the road to Houston. So it's my last trip before college football media days, and it came up at the NFL draft because I just brought it up. Amber going, all right, does anybody, because we were there for 5 days, I said, does anybody else just deny the turndown service, you know coming and cleaning your room? And because I don't do it
now, is this to be clear, because there's different types here. Now there's the hotels that will come in multiple types a day. Like, the hotels that, like, legit have turn down service in the evening.
Let's keep it,
you know,
simple.
5 p.m. Let's or is this just they're coming in to clean the room a day?
Let's keep it simple. Just cleaning your room. And
okay.
I don't go when I don't stay in. I can't afford hoity-toity hotels, first of all. So, but when it comes to, you know, ESPN's dime, I stay wherever they tell me to. I do not allow anybody, any cleaning service, to come into my hotel room. I don't know what they're doing with my toothbrush. Even if I hide my toothbrush, I would still be terrified. I don't want them going through my stuff. And I was in the minority by far of our ESPN draft crew. So, Amber, do you like people coming into your hotel room and making the bed, straightening things up, taking out the trash? Or are you like me? I don't know that person. I don't want him or her in my space.
Well, first of all, as somebody who has stayed in sketchy motels where you're scared to even sit on the bed because of what might be in there, all the way up to the fanciest of, you know, Ritz-Carltons around the world, I can tell you hoity-toity hotels are where it's at, Ian. So try it out sometime, because that is occasionally worth the money. The fancy hotels, I have to say, I am one who tends to put the do not disturb on the door and just leave it there. So if I'm in hotel for days, I don't feel the need. Now, the only time that I typically change that is if I need more towels or something, for example. But I've often even, you know, just gone, hunted down the housekeeping, hey, can I just grab some towels from you, so you don't actually have to go in and, you know, do the
call
whole
the
thing and clean the whole room. Now, what's funny is actually, like, the fancier the hotel, the more likely I am to utilize the service, though, because at some point I feel like I'm paying for it. Like, I feel like I'm paying so much anyways, I might as well utilize the service. So in that case, but I also have to tip more then, because I always tip the housekeeping at a hotel. So you have to tip more.